Hi, Smart Community friends. I'm back with another bonus episode of the Smart Community Podcast, sharing various guest answers to the question, where to next for smart cities and communities? And this time, I'm sharing with you the answers from these guests. Beata Kubitz from episode 218, Ashley Wilson from episode 223, Leah Hemmetsberger from episode 226, Marcus Fort from episode 230, Joe Palmer from 228, Christina Savien from episode 229, and finally Katia Protekovic from episode 231. Some themes that come through in the guest answers are around remote work, connectivity, knowledge sharing, and accessibility of data for communities and individuals. The impacts of COVID-19 are becoming more apparent. We will see more remote work in communities and a shift in the way people can and want to access information and data, particularly in regional and rural areas. Better sharing of knowledge and data are keys to building better connected and smarter communities. COVID-19 has presented a lot of challenges, but also a lot of opportunities to explore how we currently connect and how we can connect and use data to benefit communities. As Joe Palmer says, we are in such an opportune time, and that transfer of information is so much easier now. And I think that's exciting for smart communities, for all individuals, regardless of where you are. As always, we hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
Welcome to the smart community, smart regions, smart towns, and smart cities. It's where we live, work, and play. With smart communities, the future starts today. Big data, smart mobility, emerging trends galore. The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.
So where to next for smart communities?
Oh, well, I mean, you know, there is the sort of like COVID impact where we're seeing a lot more people who have had to become remote workers. We will see fewer people traveling into work permanently, not to the levels that it has been, but I think that kind of, there will just be that gentle chipping away at the amount of travel that's necessary for working, which you see that a small decrease could have quite massive implications on business models for transport in places where transport is privately run. So that's going to be quite interesting. So yeah, connectivity and working from home and is going to have a really big impact. It's quite difficult to tell exactly what the ultimate impact will be. But yeah, that'll be the one to watch.
I agree. And like we were talking about a bit earlier, I think it's going to be, fascinating to watch and fascinating to see what stuff does just go back to how it was and stuff that won't. And I think we'll be quite surprised by a lot of the things that happen. And it'll be interesting to see what emerges out of this time, like what people have been doing behind the scenes that maybe will come out when, like in 2021, where they've maybe spent 2020 mulling over some ideas or building some new, technology or something. Just imagining these people like whirring away in the background, and then 2021 is going to be interesting. But also that the impacts are still here, right? And we're not over this yet.
I think, no, completely. But I think we'll also see more delivery. That's the other thing that has really, the trend that will is irreversible. It's going to be more, that willingness to shop online and get delivery is kind of going to be massive. I'm hoping that it's going to be massive for cargo bikes too, obviously.
Yes. I was just thinking, we should talk more, because I'm just thinking like in Australia and some of these smaller towns, it's like it would be perfect opportunity to really show that this can work in these smaller towns, because like you said, like a lot of this stuff happens in the cities. And you know, when we talk about smart communities, when I go out to very regional Australia, it's like, well, what's that? That has nothing to do with me. But there's so much opportunity. I mean, cargo delivery is one thing, but, you know, with IoT and connectivity and doing things more efficiently with technology, et cetera, there's so much to gain in this space. So, yeah, I think it will be interesting.
Yeah, totally.
So where to next for smart communities?
Where to next? That's a really good question. And I think it's one of those things where
anything can happen, right? With COVID and everything like that in 2020, it's really brought us to the things, you know, that we officially cannot predict the future anymore, because, you know, we don't know when the next outbreak's going to be, or we don't know when the next lockdown's going to be. But for me, professionally, it's an old saying, the world is my oyster, or the world is your oyster, I should say. So for me, I'd love to get to still be part of the community, but also I want to be able to branch out, you know, into other departments and other areas that I know I'm capable of and I know that I can do well in. It's just about talking about it more, and those opportunities hopefully will, you know, be open for me. And I guess with 2021, it's going to be interesting in a way, because I don't know what it's going to look like. But for me, I want to see more communication. I want to see more support, and I want to see more of that hybridness happening, and for there to be no silos. I want there to be more of hybrid, and I want there to be more of that, because again, that's how we're going to learn and grow from that as well. But also with the Brisbane tech community, I'm really excited for, because meetups are slowly just coming back now, which is good face-to-face. Brisbane tech newbies, we haven't decided when we'll come back face-to-face. We'd love to come back maybe in February or March. We're not too sure. It's just kind of in the planning stages at the moment. But yeah, I'm super excited to see where it's going to take us, and hopefully more positivity for 2021 and moving forward. I guess, just as you say, moving forward and not thinking back on the year that still is.
Where to next for smart communities?
That is really a question that we need to see. I think where to next is, I think we need a sort of more change of mindset for more. I think what we also need to look into is how can we connect? Because I've been talking about cities quite for some time. I also talked about how I personally am interested in these mega, you know, agglomerations, and how Tokyo, for example, fascinates me as one of these big functioning cities that I don't still understand how they actually work. But what we also need to see is, how do we connect also regions and rural areas? How can we share these learnings that some of these early adopters in the sphere, and usually they are capitals or bigger cities in a region. I'm saying usually because it's not always the case. How can we make sure that we do not sort of exclude smaller cities, regions, regional areas, maybe peripheral areas? I think this is something that we should be looking towards. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. And I mean, I've said this many times on the podcast. It's why I moved from smart city to smart communities, because we want to include those people in the conversations. And city can be quite polarizing, no matter how much you say, oh, no, no, we mean everybody. But yeah, so I guess using the term smart community, but I also understand it is a term that people know. So I still, you know, use it, but then yeah, really bring it back down to the community level as well. I think even within the city, there's smart communities all throughout as well. So it's kind of like this umbrella catch-all term. But yeah, I agree with you. I think there could be some really transformational change, particularly in underserved communities. Like, I've had a few conversations lately on the podcast, people working in international development and how we can use smart community thinking in that space. And it's just fascinating because things are changing so rapidly in all of our everywhere, right? Even without COVID, like, things are changing. We've got the rising billions of, you know, the SDGs, all these things happening where we're going to have more people to, you know, people's lives are changing. And so how do we make sure that it's for the better, and using technology in the right way, I think, is something that's really important.
Yeah, I fully agree. And you also say using technology in the right way. And I think one aspect that we're also seeing now, which was proposed actually towards OAC as a new minimal mechanism, and how can we explore sort of the aspect of personal data management, and also the concept of fair artificial intelligence. How can we ensure that we're transparent on the one hand with AI, so that citizens can see how is AI used in the city? How does it affect their lives? Does it affect them negatively? Where does it apply in the city? There are really cool registries actually being launched by the city of Helsinki and the city of Amsterdam. I don't know if you've heard about this.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's really nice. And you can, there are a couple of use cases at the moment you can dive into. It's like, how is Helsinki using AI, for example, at the moment? And you can actually get a good insight into what's happening. And the other point is personal data management. There's, of course, a lot of data that the city has about its citizens. But how can we make sure that this is managed transparently, proactively, to the benefit of citizens? Again, Helsinki is a front runner in this case. I think it's the Finnish attitude that they are always, you know, upfront, experimenting, doing new stuff. I think that's really quite an inspirational approach, I think, for many. So these are also two topics that we are looking towards. And yeah, I'm super excited about those two aspects as well and how these will develop in the next year.
Yeah, no, me too. And I think that bias in data and then, but also, yeah, the open transparency is really key. And, you know, one of the reasons I went to doing a master's in data science is because I want to understand what's the actual things behind all these smart things that are happening. I want to understand, not necessarily that I'm going to be the coder that codes all the stuff, because I think there's smarter people than me that love that stuff. But learning how to do it and go, oh, okay, this, like when someone says bias in data, I was in this space, I didn't really know what that meant. I was like, well, how can that be? But then when you are in this space, you're like, oh, okay, well, what you feed in is what's come out, and no human is making a decision. So you're just going to, you know, what's the word, amplify things that if you don't have the right data sets and all those type of things, you've got shit data in, shit stuff comes out, right? But yeah, I think it's so fascinating. And things that you don't, that if you've only got one demographic doing all the tech, you don't pick these things up because it's not something that's on their radar. So I think that for me, that's what's really important, that we have diversity in decision making, because I feel like that then flows down into diversity, you know, fair decisions being made in our communities. So yeah, thanks for bringing that up. And yeah, we should definitely touch base later on that, because it's something I'm really passionate about as well.
Where to next for smart communities?
I do think that these two areas, there's lots of exciting developments occurring, not just in academia, but increasingly also in industry and government, in civil society, in the whole different other parts outside the university. And I think that is quite exciting for us to see how they're actually coalescing. Like, for instance, that DataCare project that originally was very conceptual, it actually happened towards the end of last year that we got a lot of breakthrough working with different stakeholders here in Brisbane, as well as from other parts of Australia, to come together and submit quite a substantial funding application to the Australian Research Council. So I think that is all, I think, evidence and positive signals that this work is being recognized and translated and being endorsed by both government and industry as something that is quite urgently needed. And so that will definitely keep us busy for the next couple of years. It does need, you know, the right level of time commitment in order to really do it justice. At the same time, I feel there's an urgency because, you know, the time is ticking that we really need to accelerate our progress towards something that isn't just about little efficiency gains here and there, but something that is more of a game changer in the way that we approach cities.
Yeah, I really like, yeah, seeing things being actioned, like you said, translating that down into things happening, things changing, or even things is probably not even the right word, but even the shifts of the mindset, the ideology, the how we design, how we, yeah, I guess, act as a society moving forward into the future. Where to next for smart communities?
I think that things will keep evolving like on their own, and then there will be influences like global pandemics and things that will drive things along. Like, I'm sorry, it's probably an obtuse answer there, but I don't know. I think that on like a micro scale, on that really small level, I think that individuals will influence a lot of what's next. And then what happens then is that tidal wave of the groundswell that turns into tidal waves as things sort of move. And I think that we're in just such an opportune time, moment in time as well, with the fact that you can podcast, you can watch webinars, you can do all of these things, and that transfer of information is so much easier now. And I think that that's what's really exciting, I think, for smart communities, for all communities, for all individuals that are living in, regardless of where you are, you're part of a community, and however much you engage in that community is a case by case thing. But I think that that's the thing, that a lot of the big changes now, I think, are getting driven by individuals. I was going to say smaller people. That sounds really horrific. That's not what I meant.
Yeah, I guess individuals and smaller like groups and organizations. And as you're talking there, it's like, and something I have talked about as well and written on is, you know, we now have access to our global community through a digital sense. And that's, you know, going to the conferences, meeting the different people like you were talking about, you know, the thought leaders around the world. And you have access to that global community. But then there's also now this hyper focus on our local community as well, which I think is a positive that's come out of 2020 as well, I should say. And I think it's really interesting that you don't have to have one or the other, right? I think that's been a lot of the, and you, I don't know if you felt that in what, you know, so, oh, well, I've got a remote, oh, they always have to be remote. Like that's one or the other, or I've got a remote team and, you know, and, but that's the beauty of this is now that we can choose when we interact with either of those communities. And I think that hyper focus on our local community is what's really going to drive change within our regional and rural areas too. And I think that's really important and has to feed into the smart community space. So where to next for smart communities?
I think it's about, I think the good things is, you know, that I definitely see is being involved more with the communities. Like, remember, and I'm sure, you know, when you work especially a lot in remote areas, you have, you know, community meetings, you discuss the things of the cities, you have the mayor of the cities, you know, proposing things and so on, where I can see a lot of, like, for example, local authorities now, everything's going online, right? Because they have to reduce the amount of people. All of these discussions and consultations about what to bring into the city, right, that are now happening like remotely, is accessible to a lot more people, because not everyone at the time on that day to go to the meetings and to get involved. So, and I think it's, that is probably where some, I can see some of this information being very, and like this virtual replica being very useful, right? Because not everyone, as a construction professional, we tend to understand design, we tend to understand drawings, we tend to understand that. But some people actually, they just want to see something, even if it's virtual, it kind of has, oh, this is what it looked like. And I remember being on so many public consultations, you know, in London, where it was easy for me to try to understand what it would have looked like, but it was very difficult for a person who is not from the industry to understand, right? And then when we were implementing the scheme, they were like, oh no, this is not what it should have looked like, you know, and they were very surprised. So here you see immediately, it's like, okay, we have our virtual replica, we have our virtual representation, some information are very useful for the public good. Because we can make them available to the public, we can see and simulate some of the aspects, right, of what that would look like, what would that, you know, would sound like, right? And then is where people can comment on it. I was like, yeah, I like this, or no, or we can make changes before it's too late. In fact, I participated on this very great piece of research, which is the creation of this European Building Logbook. And one of the challenges, so it's a new research, it's going to be published in December. It took quite a few years. I was involved on some parts on, A, what is the data that is public, should we make transparent on the European, you know, level for our buildings? Obviously, there is the huge impact on trying to reduce the carbon, you know, overall the carbon energy consumption to reduce the carbon emissions. So definitely, there was a big tick item, right? Not the energy consumption of our, you know, buildings, it's something that we can make available and trying to reduce that. But somehow, like the basic information, what is the right information to make available for the public good, and what and how do we link cities together, how we do link, you know, the entire Europe together, who owns the data, the security, obviously big challenge if there is, you know, so there is a lot that we can do. It's a matter of what serves the, you know, I think the community, what perhaps would threat the community, and how, you know, what we want to adopt.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, like you were saying earlier, the digital twin from the use case perspective, actually, yeah, I think trying some of these use cases out, showing the community And yeah, you were talking about, you know, I think we overestimate humans' ability to look at something in 2D and then imagine it in 3D. And I think particularly when you don't work in the space as well. So I think that's an important one too.
Yeah. And, you know, think about making, even like on a small level, the ability that, you know, you get involved and say, you know what, I want to move to a new city. I want to move to this apartment. I want to know everything. So I want to, you know, at the moment, we don't hand over the digital aspect. You get your deed, you own the property, you own everything, but you don't own the digital. But so much digital data was that you can reuse. At the end of the day, it should be yours. So who is the owner of that? What is people are doing with that data that actually as an owner should be mine? And definitely challenging on like big towers and big blocks and multifamily, but on a small dwelling, for example, very challenging to collect the digital data to maintain it, if you think about it, because it's quite expensive. But at the end of the day, you have a full record of 100 and, you know, plus years old. We are currently refurbishing our property in Port Melbourne, and is 100 and something years old. And we, you know, we open things, we open the floor, we don't even know what was there, right? I also had the pleasure to discover what termites can do in this country, which is something I never seen before. But it's, you know, I would have loved definitely to have this digital. We hardly have paper, right? So it's, and I just remember the same thing in London. You even have the handwritten, you know, paper. So there's not much you can do with that. That's what I'm saying is, and sometimes it's the data, the digital data is created anyway, right? So why are we not using it?
Yeah, it's bringing that together for sure. So where to next for smart communities?
Hopefully somewhere wonderful. Now, I think we're now getting to the point where we have really complex and interesting experiences and projects. We have interesting models emerging. And where to next, I think we'll be greatly informed about how well we can interact with each other, meaning share the experience, share the knowledge, showing to other cities that there is a benefit to doing it and that the barrier of entry is actually much lower than the cities might imagine. And we really need that. At the moment, one of the things that is kind of scary is because the smart city or smart community in the way of technology or in the way of public participation is oftentimes associated with big cities, let's say Paris or New York or Boston, and a small town on the south of Czech Republic is really intimidated by it. So we do need to create this knowledge base of showing that it's not only for big, shiny, expensive communities, it's for anyone. And I think this is where we're going to be moving away from, oh, this is a very elitist, very like crème de la crème type of thing, but it's really for anyone and everyone.
Mm, no, thanks so much for sharing that. It's something I guess that's my purpose in life, is to bring that, which sounds very grand, is to bring it to everybody, because it's not this elitist thing. And if people think it's that, then they can think it's that and they can go and do that type of thing. But actually we want to build what the substance underneath the smart cities, the smart communities, how can we bring the substance, not the hype, not the buzz, but the substance into our communities? Because like you said, participation, like if I just talk about participation, we need to acknowledge that tech is there, because otherwise we're completely missing a whole channel. We're missing a part of people's lives. Everybody has this, not everybody, I should say, but it's growing, like you said as well. The rising billions are getting more access to the internet. So we need to be using the tools for good, teaching people how to use them, and also then, I guess, giving them the digital and data literacy so then they can know what decisions they can make, but also things to look out for too. So then they can protect themselves, or we can protect them as, you know, a government can protect them, et cetera, what they know they need to ask for. So there's so many things in that space. So yeah.
The Smart Community Podcast is brought to you by My Smart Community. If you're trying to deal with disruption, not sure what technologies to buy, need to facilitate genuine collaboration, then we can help. Email hello@mysmart.community or head to www.mysmart.community/consulting.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart Community Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes are available on our website, mysmart.community/podcast. If you have any questions for us or any of our guests, you can email hello@mysmart.community. You can also find us on the socials. We are on LinkedIn and Twitter @smartcomhq. That's com with two M's. If you are enjoying the podcast, please hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. And we would love for you to leave us a rating and review at wherever you listen. This really helps us reach more ears and eyes, so thank you for your support. As always, we hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.